Psalm chapter 9, chapter 18, text number 28 and 29. Okay, I'll read the Sanskrit and the translation for 28, we'll do 29 together. Tateti avastite praha devayane manogatam vichadatta yato yasye sanuga yatu yatu mam anu. Translation. After hearing Shukracharya's request, Rishabharva agreed to fulfill Devayani's desire, and he awaited her words. Devayani then expressed her desire as follows. Whenever I marry by the order of my father, my friend Sarmista must go with me as my maidservant along with her friend. Text number 29, all together. And then you respond. Pitra tata deva devayanyai Shamista sanugatada Swanam tat sankatam viksya Taratasya chagauravam Devayanim pariyacharat Sri Sahasrena Dasavat Pitra Data Deva Devayanyai Shamista Sanugatada Sanam Tat Sankatam Viksya Tadatasya Chagauravam Devayanim pariyacharat Sri Sahasrena Dasavat Pitra Data Devayanyai Shamishta Sanugatada Sanam Tat Sankatam Viksya Tadatasya Chagauravam Devayanim Pariyacharat Sri Sahasrena Dasavat. Somebody else?
Thank you.
translation, word for word. Pitra, by the fathers. Gata, given. Devayanyai, unto Devayani, the daughter of Shukracharya. Shamista, the daughter of Rishabharva. Sa Anuga, with her friends. Tada, at that time. Svanam, of his own. Tat, that. Sankatam, dangerous position. Viksya, observing. Tat, from him. Artasya, of the benefit. Cha, also. Gauravam, the greatness. Devayanam, unto Devayani. Paryacharat, serve. Sri Sahasrena, with thousands of other women. Dashabat, acting as a slave. Translation. Vrishabhava wisely thought that Shukracharya's displeasure would bring danger and that his pleasure would bring material gain. Therefore he carried out Shukracharya's order and served him like a slave. He gave his daughter Samishta to Devayani, and Samishta served Devayani like a slave along with thousands of other women. Please repeat. Vrishabhava wisely thought that Shukracharya's displeasure would bring danger and that his pleasure would bring material gain. Therefore he carried out Shukracharya's order and served him like a slave. He gave his daughter Shamishta to Devayani, and Shamishta served Devayani like a slave along with thousands of other women. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In the beginning of these affairs concerning Shamishta and Devayani, we saw that Shamishta had many friends. Now these friends became maidservants of Devayani. When a girl married a Kshatriya king, it was customary for all her girlfriends to go with her to her husband's house. For instance, when Vasudeva married Devaki, the mother of Krishna, he married all six of her sisters, and she also had many friends who accompanied her. A king would maintain not only his wife, but also the many friends and maidservants of his wife. Some of these maidservants would become pregnant and give birth to children. Such children were accepted as Dasi Putra, the sons of the maidservants, and the king would maintain them. The female population is always greater than the male, but since a woman needs to be protected by a man, the king would maintain many girls who acted either as friends or as maidservants of the queen. In the history of Krishna's household life, we find that Krishna married 16,108 wives. These were not maidservants, but direct queens, and Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 forms to maintain different establishments for each and every wife. This is not possible for ordinary men. Therefore, although the kings had to maintain many, many servants and wives, not all of them had different establishments. Om Gyan Pramanasya Gananyanam Shlakaya Chakshur Maritanya Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Maha. So Srila Prabhupada says here that the female population in this world is always greater than the male. So I actually looked up this on the computer, and it's a fact that there are definitely more women than men in this world. In America, there's about 5 million more women than men. And in India, it's not the same, because many female children are aborted in the womb, which is a terrible crime. But they're aborted because having a female child according to their customs, means giving a big dowry. And apparently, when these girls are born, if the poor family has to give a dowry, it ruins the family. But now, because they have modern, whatever it is, medical technique to discern what the sex of the baby is, they find out it's a female, so they kill the female child in the womb. It said something, I can't remember, maybe it was 10 million a year, female fetuses are aborted, crazy amount. Anyway, this is the Kali Yuga, and even though India is supposed to be the land of religion, still, what can you say? India is still special. They need to, whether that's the non-Hindu population or whatever, I don't know, but anyway, it's abominable. Anyway, so because there are more females than males, I don't know why that is, because Srila Prabhupada explains, then during the time of intercourse, if the female is more lusty, then a female child is born. So I don't know whether that has anything to do with the fact that there are more females in the world, who knows. But in the traditional Indian or Vedic history of the world, we hear the story of Chitraketu Maharaj. And Chitraketu, he had 10 million wives, believe it or not. Of course, we accept the Srimad Bhagavatam as the absolute truth. And sometimes these things may be a little bit hard to understand, but we don't know exactly how many years Chitraketu lived, but it's possible that he lived for several thousand years. I don't really know. Anyone know which yuga he was born in? But he didn't have any children, even though he had 10 million wives, and he was very, very unhappy. So he tried to get a child with his first wife. She couldn't have a child, so he tried with his second wife, and he ended up with 10 million wives. Anyway, we know the story of how he couldn't have any children, and then he had a son, and the son was to be both a blessing and a curse because the son died. And the co-wives, they were very envious of the one wife who had the child, so they conspired to poison that baby. And there was a huge lamentation in the whole household of King Chitraketu. So the one wife was very, very happy that she had a son, and the other wives were very, very unhappy because King Chitraketu was giving all his attention to the one wife who had the son. So this is echoed somewhat in the prayer by Prahlad Maharaj. When he's pacifying Lord Nrisimhadeva with prayers, he says a nice prayer where he explains somewhat the difficulty of having more than one wife, where he says, "My dear Lord, O infallible one, my position is like that of a person who has many wives, all trying to attract him in their own way. For example, the tongue is attracted to palatable dishes, the genitals to sex with an attractive woman, and the sense of touch to contact with soft things. The belly, although filled, still wants to eat more. And the ear, not attempting to hear about you, is generally attracted to cinema songs. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to scenes of sense gratification, and the active senses are attracted elsewhere. In this way, I'm certainly embarrassed." So, if one has many wives, it could be a major problem. And Prabhupada didn't even know, because they get envious and whatever. It costs a lot of money too. But nice silk saris and gold bangles. Price of gold nowadays would be very difficult. So Srila Prabhupada, he, even though polygamy is a part of Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada nipped it in the bud very early on. In ISKCON, there was one temple president in Potomac or in Washington who wanted to take, or who did take, the second wife, and Srila Prabhupada said that he cannot be the president. Because Srila Prabhupada wanted to train Brahmins, and Brahmins specifically, they lead renounced lives. So one wife is enough for a Brahmin. It was enough for Lord Ramachandra. He took the Ekapatni Vrat. He only had one wife to show what the ideal standard is for human beings. And even that one wife proved to be a lot of problems. Prabhupada explains how he was also showing that even to have one wife could bring so many difficulties, because she got kidnapped and then there was a big war and everything else, because she was very beautiful. So Chanakya Pandit says, don't marry a beautiful wife. But, you know, who else is Lord Ram supposed to marry but a beautiful wife? He has to marry a beautiful wife. Anyway, so Prabhupada, he did not want his devotees. He was trying to train a society of Brahmins. On top of that, of course, we know that it's against the law to have more than one wife in America, even though it seems in the state of Utah they somehow or other managed to circumvent that particular law, and they keep getting caught. One man has got 20 wives, and some of them are like teenagers and this and that. But anyway, we're trying to show the ideal standard of how Brahmins or human beings are supposed to live. And in fact, there's a very nice passage in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know the verses, which Pushkar pointed out to me, about the prayers offered by Lakshmi Devi in the chapter, the residents of Jambadweep offer prayers. This is about a woman who wants to get a husband, because actually, if somebody thinks they're the wife of a man, a particular man, this is a certain type of illusion, because we're all female. And this is explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that every living entity is actually female. So if somebody's proud of the fact that they have a male body, this is a certain type of ignorance, because we're not male. Krishna is male, and everybody is female in the sense that they're enjoyed by Krishna. So the Lakshmi Devi, she's offering these prayers. She says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishikesh, the controller of all my senses and the origin of everything. As the supreme master of all bodily, mental, and intellectual activities, he is the only enjoyer of their results. The five sense objects and 11 senses, including the mind, are his partial manifestations. He supplies all the necessities of life, which are his energy, and thus none different from him. And he is the cause of everyone's bodily and mental prowess, which is also none different from him. Indeed, he is the husband and provider of necessities for all living entities. And in the next verse, she says, my dear Lord, you are certainly the fully independent master of all the senses. Therefore, all women who worship you by strictly observing vows because they wish to acquire a husband to satisfy their senses are surely under illusion. They do not know that such a husband cannot actually give protection to them or their children, nor can he protect their wealth or duration of life. For he himself is dependent on time, fruit of results, and the modes of nature, which are all subordinate to you. And then the final one. He alone, who is never afraid, but who, on the contrary, gives complete shelter to all fearful persons, can actually become a husband and protector. Therefore, my Lord, you are the only husband, and no one else can claim this position. If you were not the only husband, you would be afraid of others. Therefore, persons learned in all Vedic literature accept only your lordship as everyone's master, and they think no one else is a better husband and protector than you. So this is the goddess of fortune. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, he had so many wives. We don't see many great acharyas. Of course, we know Vasudeva, Krishna's father, had more than one wife. And in more recent history, except maybe some kshatriyas, rajas in India, but we see that actually Lord Nityananda, he had two wives. He married Janava, and then after that whole marriage ceremony, she had a beautiful younger sister. It's interesting because it's described in the Nityananda Charitamrita how when she was serving at the wedding, somehow or other a sari slipped off her head when she was serving, and she immediately manifested four arms. Ashuddha, her name was. And Lord Nityananda actually accepted her as his second wife. So, because Krishna, he had so many wives and so many girlfriends. And the story of those wives and gopis is also very interesting. Narada Muni, in the Garga Samhita, Narada Muni is speaking, and he is talking about the different personalities who actually became gopis or wives of Krishna when he was on this planet 5,000 years ago. So he's talking about the demigoddesses, because some of the demigoddesses were very attracted to Krishna. So it describes how in Malava Desh, a great king named Nanda Devaspati, he had 1,000 wives. He went on a pilgrimage to Mathura, and he found Mathura so beautiful that he wanted to live there. He had many, many daughters, and his daughters were actually the demigoddesses, the devis, who were so attracted to Krishna. And when they saw Krishna, they became so bewildered by love for him, so they performed the vow of Maga Vrat. They bathed in the Jamuna at sunrise and sang of the Lord's pastimes. And Krishna appeared before them and asked them what benediction they wanted. So they naturally asked for them for the benediction that Krishna would always appear before their eyes. And then we have the story of the sages of Dandakaranya Forest. And there was a wealthy gopa named Mangala. And he had 900,000 cows. This is also in the Garga Samhita. And somehow or other, one day, he lost all his wealth. All his cows died, and all his wealth was taken away. And he was lamenting like anything. He didn't know what to do. And he had so many daughters. He didn't have any sons. So he was completely, because, you know, so many dowries you have to provide to marry your daughters off, etc. So he didn't know what to do. He was lamenting, what shall I do? Where shall I go? How will my daughters marry if I have no wealth? How can I make them happy? And then, from nowhere, a wise and learned cowherd boy appeared, elderly, called Jaya. And he told him of the fabulous wealth of Nanda Maharaj. And so, this king, Mangala, he sent his daughters to see Nanda Maharaj. And so, Nanda Maharaj engaged them in milking his cows. He had so many cows. And in Nanda's home, the girls now decorated with jewels milked the cows in the barns, and they gazed at Krishna and they worshipped the Jamuna to get Krishna as their husband. So Krishna fulfilled their desires and Krishna became their husband. So So that was the sages of Dandakanya that became attracted to Lord Ramachandra. So we see that in the Guru Parampara, there are many great devotees who in their previous life in Goloka Vrindavan were actually gopis, manjaras, and of course Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhaktivinod Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They were all manjaras. And so this is the real position, or to be enjoyed by Krishna in whatever, whether you're a tree or a fruit. It's like Krishna when he was in the forest of Vrindavan and he saw the trees and he glorified the trees. Look how magnanimous these trees are. They're providing so much for all of us. They're giving their shade, they're giving their fruit. They're so kind. So he was glorifying the trees. So the trees, they're also serving Krishna. And the river Jamuna, there's a beautiful prayer in the Garga Samhita. I keep talking about it because I'm reading it right now. It's very interesting. So there's 1,000 names for the river Jamuna. And it said if you say these names, you get so much benefit. Anyway, so many wonderful benefits you get just by repeating the names. So this is the real position of all of us. In the Maha Mantra, we are saying Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And the last Hare, or the second to last Hare, is described by Gopal Guru Goswami, who was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's spiritual master, I believe. He said that this means, please make me fit to be enjoyed by you. And the last Hare means, please enjoy me, whether I'm a blade of grass and you step on me with your soft feet, or whatever I am, please enjoy me. So this is what we're saying when we chant the Maha Mantra. Another point in this purport is that this is probably one of the most significant points it says here. But since a woman needs to be protected by a man, this is a very significant part of Vedic culture, that the woman is always protected by the man. And this is, could be somewhat controversial, but it's not at all controversial, because basically the woman is physically weaker, oftentimes mentally stronger. We don't see many men who can pray like Kunti Devi, Vipada Shantitasha Shrat Tetra Tetra Jagaguru Bhavato Dashanam Yatsyada Puna Bhavadashanam. She said, lo, those calamities happen again and again. For by seeing them, we will see your lotus feet. So Krishna came to protect the Pandavas because they were in danger. Krishna always protects his devotees. So Queen Kunti, she prayed for more and more calamities. So how many men would pray like that? But women have a role in society, and that role is really the ideal role, is to be the guru, at least of the children, and to be an example of how to worship Krishna. So there's many examples of great female devotees. Generally in the disciplic succession, there's not really many examples of females who had disciples, not shiksha, not diksha disciples. There are many females who can give shiksha, but generally because the woman is to be protected, it's not appropriate for her to be giving protection. There are some female gurus who were Vishnu Tattva, but not hardly maybe one that Pushkar was trying to remember her name, couldn't remember. He can remember most things, but he stumbled on that one. Ashcharama. Okay. Anyway, it's not many. So, but there's no question of inferior or superior, because a person is appreciated by how much love they have for Krishna. That is really what life is all about, that somebody's greatness is measured by how they have developed their love for Krishna. So whether you're in a male body or a female body, it doesn't matter, because the goal is not dependent on what body you're in. So anyway, I think I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Her son? Lord Nityananda's wife?
I don't know.
Or disciple? I'm not sure if it's physical initiation or...
Not really sure about that. Does anyone know for sure? What's that? Speak out, bud.
Her brother was son of Vasudha.
Oh. So Janava initiated the son of Vasudha. Okay. What was his name? Virabhadra. Okay. Yes.
Coming back to divorce,
To what?
Divorce.
To the forest.
Divorce.
For the horse? The verse. Oh gosh, your accent.
Divorce.
That's a guy in his accent. Okay, sorry.
So Devayani, it seems like, you know, she was in some ways trying to take vengeance.
Take vengeance, yes.
And
I just wanted to mention one thing. I was talking to a probation officer. You can carry on in a second, sir. And he was saying that female delinquents are much worse than male delinquents. They're much more difficult. Yeah.
So what happened is it ended up as a disadvantage for her, because eventually Sharmishta would will actually copulate with Yayati.
Would what was the Yayati?
Yeah,
would
she
have a, would have union.
Yeah,
union
with Yayati, and so
okay.
that created even much more headache for her later on, you know. So
yeah. Well, he's Yayati's a bit lusty, you know, and so. You know, with all these women around, it's hard for him to control his senses. Yeah. So then he had to become an old man. Yeah, Krishna. Correction.
Guru, did you mention Gopal Guru?
Yeah.
You know, it's Guru he lived like during most of your time this time.
Oh, well. Yeah, I thought... Correction. Okay. Thank you very much. Who was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's guru then?
Bipin Bihari. Sounds almost like Gopal Guru.
Sarcasm is the lowest form of wit, you know. So if you've got to say something, you've got to say something that's not sarcastic. Okay.
Howdy, Bo. I was just reading this. This is a purport. This is a class Prabhupada gave in Nairobi in 75, he just happens to mention this about women.
Uh-huh.
Prabhupada says, we should always remember that we should remain under the protection of Krishna. That is our perfection. Just like a woman is advised to remain under the control of her husband. But that is an insult to them. They cannot tolerate it.
That's what
Prabhupada
happy.
Said. But then the next sentence, Prabhupada says, but actually we see that in India, that a wife who remains under the guidance of the husband is happy. That is a practical fact. And therefore in Manasamhita it is advised, Nastriyam Svantratam Marhati, women should always be protected. And then Prabhupada says, protection means not negligence. Protection means give her all facilities. That is protection. Just like the father protects the child. I just thought it was interesting how Prabhupada said that if a woman is advised to remain under the protection of her husband, this is a great insult to them. Mm-hmm. So you just have to know that when you're going into this deal here. We don't want to offend anybody.
Right. Well, another thing was, I was listening to a recording of Srila Prabhupada. He was glorifying this woman whose faithfulness to the husband is also glorified. And Prabhupada was saying how this woman, she was serving her husband even though he was disfigured and he was crippled. But this is, you know, that he saw with his, this isn't a story from, you know, the Shastras or anything. Although there are stories from the Shastras, this woman Savitri, I don't know the whole story, Pushkar couldn't remember it, I was asking him, how she became famous because she, by her determination and her service to her husband, she was going to stop the sun from rising. So, you know, Prabhupada was just remarking that he'd seen this instance where this crippled man was served so faithfully by his wife. So, anyway,
I always notice since we're speaking Srimad Bhagavatam that there's the way the material energy works and the way the spiritual energy works are generally not the same. So, in the spiritual context, someone sees that this material world has its allurements. And it has its nature that's going to entangle us and give us repeated birth and death. And those who are spiritually aware of that, they don't interact with this material world freely. They always understand its dubious nature. But someone who doesn't have spiritual enlightenment, they're thinking this material nature is their friend and they're fully absorbed in it and they're exponents of it. So when we say that how someone who acts under the material nature, they take this as a great insult, is because it's the material nature acting through them. And the ones that recognize that this life is for a higher purpose, then they can accept immediately, yes, this will protect me from the material energy. So it's always the context that we have is that we can separate those two, understand the spiritual context and the material context, and each has its own warning to self-preservation. So if one is controlled by the material energy, they have their self-preservation and they assert themselves through that. The material energy asserts itself through that situation.
Good point. Any ladies got anything to add? Yeah.
I was just remembering about, you're talking about many wives. So I was remembering that how I was visiting my parents in Qatar, which is near Saudi Arabia, and there the houses were huge, like really huge, like palaces almost, you know. Mm. And so then I was told that, you know, the man, he has a lot of wives,
right.
And they have each, like inside the big house, there are different apartments actually,
mm.
And then for each wife he has different apartments. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, that oil, that if the cars run out, they don't make any money selling gas.
because you see them all in London, all these Arab ladies, you know, with all the black stuff, and going to Harrods, you know, Harrods like the best shop in the world, run by an Egyptian. His son was dating Princess Diana. But anyway, but you see all these women in London, all a bunch of ladies, all the black stuff, all going to Harrods, buying beds and stuff for the beautiful apartments.
I have a godbrother-to-be, I think he's in Mexico, and I was told that he has a business, and he has, and his home is like an apartment complex of 12 stories, and each one has a different wife there, and that's kind of a little
weird. You mean he has more than one wife?
Right, yeah, he has 12 wives.
Wow.
And each one, he has an apartment, one flat for them. Anyway, I was just wondering, in relation to our Krishna consciousness movement, we're talking about women being under the protection of the husband. We find in our present day society and within our movement that a lot of the women don't have husbands, or those who do have husbands, some percentage are not devotees that would understand the Vedic concept.
Are not devotees?
Right, yeah, you do have some percentage.
Some devotees.
Some ladies that were devotees, their husbands are not devotees.
Right.
So I'm just wondering how would that relate with this concept of protection?
Well, when I was a long time ago, when I was a young devotee, at the manor there was a lady who was a devotee. She was a disciple of Prabhupada, actually. She got initiated. And her husband was a non-devotee. And Srila Prabhupada just told her to serve your husband. And he was a meat eater. So, you know, if you're in that situation where you somehow or other married a non-devotee, bit of a blow. But, you know, Prabhupada just said, serve him and be a devotee when you can. But hopefully, you know, a devotee, our girls, I mean, basically, one of the problems is that the men exploit the women, and the women have to marry the man. And, you know, our girls need to be protected from that. We need to find suitable husbands for them, somehow or other. Although it's not easy for your daughter to submit to your choice of a husband. That's what I found. But she found her own, and he was probably the best choice I could have made anyway.
Actually,
his
in
father's right here. I better watch out.
You know, it must be said though, in defense of in modern, you know, in marriage, especially these days, it is really difficult to find anybody who's worthy, male, female, or eunuch. Most people are completely, most people are so distracted by the Kali Yuga stuff and Kama. That they can't offer any kind of help or protection. I want to speak of spiritual life. So it's very rare. I know, because I have a daughter, and I think about this sometimes. And I look around, and I'm like, which one of her friends is going to be, you know, could I trust?
Well, you're already looking for a 5-year-old.
Well, you have to. They're already talking about it. Nine and 10-year-old girls are talking about all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, you just can't, you know, my two boys, I don't worry about them because they're boys, but I got this daughter now, and you got to wonder, you know,
well,
who could you trust?
There's one young boy of 9 who comes to Mungo Arctic sometimes. If you pay me enough, I'll give you his name. Hare Krishna. Anything else? All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.